and welcome to part 2 of episode 3, entitled Go Wild, Planting Wildflowers to Encourage Biodiversity. If you're joining in from part 1, you know part 2 features Ash Pearson from the National Trust. Ash and I toured a parcel of land out on Cape Cornwall where the wildflowers grown by Nick Hall and his team at Bazavern Community Farm are being implemented in a National Trust project. Ash speaks about using wildflowers as a means to reintroduce a diversity of insects and invertebrates on a grand landscape such as along the Coastal Trail. By re-establishing landscapes with dense flora, it serves to feed those within it well. We also talk about national and grassroots organizations collaborating, how messages and purpose overlap, and the outcome shared. If you're dropping in to part 2, let me point out there is a part 1 entitled Go Wild, Planting Wildflowers to Encourage Biodiversity, where Nick Hall from Bazavern Community Farm heads up the wildflower project and speaks about the history of the project, its function within the community, and on using wildflowers to attract and feed a broader range of insects and invertebrates no matter the size of your space. Whichever direction you come, let's listen on as Ash speaks on bringing back and feeding nature through wildflowers. Hello, and welcome to the Twist and Spout podcast, episode number 4, coming to you today on location with Ash Pearson from the National Trust at Cape Cornwall, and where we're going to be discussing the wildflower project that is going on over here. Hello, Ash. How are you doing today?
Hi, Carl. Good to see you today on this fine day at Cape Cornwall.
Can you give us a little bit of a background to who is Ash Pearson?
Yeah, I'm the Countryside Manager for West Cornwall for the National Trust.
Terrific. And Ash, I like to always ask it as a starter question. What's your favourite vegetable and how do you cook it?
Favourite vegetable? Ooh, parsnip with honey roasted.
Simple. Yeah. Terrific. Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about how you're populating the fields with wildflowers and bringing back biodiversity to the area? Am I correct about that?
Yeah, that's right. So many people know we've got a real issue with our wildlife in the UK. So there's been a massive decline in our number of species. Brought about by a number of things, development, intensive agriculture, lots of different threats to our species and our habitats. So what we're trying to do is make our habitats better. So lots of conservation going on, part of which is getting more wildflowers into all the areas that we look after and manage. So what does that entail? So we've got a big project going on across Cornwall within the National Trust, looking at our meadows and reseeding them so that we can get a much better range of flowers in our fields and lots more flowers as well. So a quantity of flowers, but the range of species as well is important. So in the past 50 years, we've probably lost 97% in the UK of our lowland meadows. So that's what this project's all about.
97%?
Yeah, it's a huge number. So they're in a really bad state, really. And so, you know, we've identified a number of meadows across the West Cornwall patch and similar areas of National Trust have done similar across Cornwall, and we're then looking at where we've got really good examples of meadows. We're collecting the seeds from those are our donor sites, and then we're bringing them to other fields that have poor diversity in terms of flowers, and then we're reseeding those fields, so eventually they will become the future donor sites and we'll be able to collect seeds from those fields to then take to other sites which are poorer in quality.
Okay, so we're on one of 5 paddocks here that are part of this project?
Yeah, there's four main fields here. None of them are, you know, in real perfect condition. They're very much in restoration stage. We've got some flowers here, which is great to see, but we want to sort of have more. We want to have them, you know, greater range and more of them. So eventually you want to be able to come into a field like this and it just be bright with flowers, butterflies, bees buzzing around. You want to be able to see grasshoppers hopping about. You know, they want to be alive with wildlife. Here you can just see down there a burnet moth flying and feeding on the bird's foot trefoil. We want to see more of that. This whole place should be humming.
And that noise in the background was a mountain biker with really poor brakes, if anyone was wondering. We are not surrounded by any traffic. This is pretty much wild area. Why is it so poor here? It's not near any sort of industrial part of, you know, of Cornwall. So what would make this area need the assistance that you're giving it?
I think probably this area has just been not managed hugely in the past. So one of the things that we've introduced back here in the last few years is grazing. And so it's really important that we get good grazing. We graze this site in the winter. So the ponies come in here and they graze the grass down really short so that it's all ready for the following year. In terms of the springtime, that provides the right conditions for wildflowers to thrive. Where you've got really thick matted grass, the wildflowers aren't really going to stand much of a chance to sort of come through. The grass is pretty competitive and will outcompete the wildflowers. So the grazing is really important, and that's why we've put that in place on a huge number of our sites. I think in the last few years we've probably got 20 new sites for grazing on the cliffs, on the headlands, but also in some of our meadow areas, so that we can really manage the grassland better.
It's nature that's competing with itself, and you're trying to assist to get the flowers that are important, or the wildflowers that are important, for a larger biodiversity to take place.
That's right, yeah. So here, I mean, it would take a while, but if we left it and closed the gate and didn't do anything, eventually you'd get bracken coming in and encroaching, and
right,
bramble. And so, you know, whilst both of those, you know, have some significance and importance for wildlife, what we wouldn't want is this whole field just covered in bramble and bracken. It would benefit some bird nesting, it would benefit some species that feed on those plants, but you know, it would be quite a narrow range. Whereas what we're looking for here is, as I said before, you know, lots and lots of different wildflowers that will feed lots of invertebrates. There'll be then birds and other other animals that will feed on those invertebrates. So you start to build up the whole food chain by having really good wildflowers.
I know we have a very special set of bees in Kinnegic Valley. Can they reach this far where we are to get what they need from the wildflowers here?
Yes, they can. So it's interesting, originally the big field here at Cape, we used to graze with cattle and keep it short during the summer. So we changed that a few years ago, and we started to grow the grass long during the summer for hay, and then we'd cut it at the end of the summer. And it was through doing that we got some feedback from a chap that we work with, who's, you know, a real expert on bees, and he congratulated us on our management and how it was really benefiting the bees, because basically the bees were able to come down and feed on the flowers. Those flowers were then setting seed for future years. So through that sort of contact, I guess, he told us there were six species of rare bee that we're finding here in the fields at Cape. One of which is the longhorn mining bee, which is really rare, and it nests over in Kinnegic. They need food within 900 metres of where they nest, and they're only out sort of flying for maybe 6 weeks of the year. So our challenge is to make sure we've got enough flowers of the right types in 6 weeks flowering, and also 900 metres from the nest. So, you know, that's quite a challenge. And it's not just any flowers they need. So these rare bees, they need, they can feed on any wildflower for nectar, for their sort of their energy for flight. But what they really need for their nesting materials, for the proteins to make their nests, are pollen from leguminous plants. So that's plants from the pea family. So things like bird's foot trefoil that we see here, kidney vetch, meadow vetchling, tufted vetch, all of which we sort of find in this vicinity.
Speaking of a kind of a network that's happening, field-to-field-to-field network that's allowing, obviously, in this case, the bees to travel and do what they need to do. If you take this example, which is quite, you know, it's in the wild, basically, can you adapt it and put it into a more urban environment using a similar network?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that everyone can do their bit by growing wildflowers in their garden, leaving sort of, you know, a wild bit rather than sort of manicuring everything, feeding the birds. There's lots of things that people can do in their own back garden that sort of create that network of habitat that provides food and shelter for wildlife.
And what about the folks who say, well, I go every year to the garden center, I buy myself a bunch of flowers and I plant it, I have bees in my garden. Are they doing anything wrong, or could they do anything different to help with the cause that you're talking about?
No, I mean, some of those flowers will be good for invertebrates as well. I think what I'd probably say would be, you know, try and keep a wild bit in your garden that is going to be suitable for wildlife. So whether that's sort of a bit of rough ground with maybe some logs and brush and that's suitable for maybe hedgehogs and other animals such as that, or whether it's flowers for sort of pollinators. You can do lots in your garden to maybe have a pond feature. There's lots of things you can do to attract wildlife to your garden and help try and you know, balance this decline in species. We want to really fight against it and really boost our species.
Councils and council land, as you drive along the highways, a lot of it is left uncut. I think they maybe cut it once a year or once a summer, maybe twice. Is that potentially very good land to help establish a network corridor?
Yeah, so you'll have seen probably on the dual carriageway, on the A30 in places, and on other roads, I think the councils have changed some of their practices where they don't cut all the time. They cut maybe once or twice a year, and that is hugely benefit because you can see the flowers. You know, some roundabouts I've seen where you've got a whole host of wildflowers in on the roundabout, whereas maybe traditionally that would have been cut as a lawn. A chuff in the background there. Mm. Sort of changing practice in terms of cutting regimes is really important. If you can just cut once or twice a year, then brilliant. There might be a part of your lawn that you might want to just leave and just cut once a year. That will be beneficial. You know, it doesn't mean to say everyone has to stop gardening. You know, lots of people really enjoy being outdoors and doing gardening, but, you know, maybe just leave a little bit that could be suitable for wildlife allow wildlife to sort of still thrive in your garden. Give them something that's, you know, they're going to be able to feed on, shelter. And if it's all manicured, then you sort of remove very much the sort of space that they can live in.
You've needed to bring in and help with kickstarting land that was getting tired. And I know that that's a relationship you have with a variety of community farms and other suppliers. In our case, with Bosavern Community Farm.
So we've done the reseeding project is underway. We've been doing that for a year. So one of the things we thought would be really good to sort of complement that was plug planting. So that's where we've teamed up with Bosavern to and their volunteer team to grow on some wild flower plugs. So it's great because obviously Basavan is has the expertise, the space, the resource to be able to grow on wildflower plugs that we need. So it's a win-win really if we can use a great grassroots organisation like Basavan to supply the plugs that we plant in our land to, as I say, complement the seeding we're doing already. It means that we can, some of those leguminous plants that we really want, like tufted vetch, it means we can, you know, really specialise in some of those and plant those around these fields, because we know that if we can try and get those to colonise, they're really going to benefit the rare bees that we've got here.
If somebody's looking to kickstart their own back garden, that's something that they could do as well, is pick up seeds or plug plants.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got a fairly boring lawn at home, but I'm sort of thinking I might try and get some greater bird's foot trefoil. You know, that could be something to add, just to add a bit of interest for the wildlife in my own back garden.
Right. Just as we're talking, we have a pheasant with her babies that's slowly approaching us. They're getting more and more... more and more courage behind them to see what we're up to. Maybe they like the sound device I have attached to this. I think, if you don't mind, maybe having a bit of a walk around and, in this case, I have a bit of a walk around and then maybe introduce me and the listener to what it is we're seeing.
Yeah, that sounds good.
If we could take a walk through, Ash, and maybe you can describe some of the flowers that, you know, are populating this field, and any surprises or things that come to mind?
Yeah, so predominantly you've got bird's foot trefoil. There's lots of that in here, so that's going to be really good for pollinators. Again, you can see there's a burnet moth. I think it's a six-spot burnet moth just on the flowers down there. And this feathery-leaved one is yarrow. So that flower's just a little bit later, but that's another great species to have here. Over here, if we, I'll show you over here. Here we've got some knapweed, so that will flower much later in the season, around sort of August time. It's one of the later flowering, but it's great. It has like purple thistle-like flowers, which are great for pollinators. So that'll be a really nice addition at the end of the season.
Towards which month, sorry?
End of August sort of time it starts to flower.
And that's helping the bees you were talking about was a 6-week period, so towards August, what does that feed into? Or
yeah, so it might be too late for them. Those particular bees may have finished by then, but they'll benefit other pollinators. So if you imagine over the sort of season, really what you want is lots of flowers flowering at different times. So there's a nice border food for those invertebrates that come to flowers.
So we're avoiding a hunger gap.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
You see on this slope here, it's really nice, you know, getting a lot of the sunshine here. So you've got a bit more diversity here. And you can see there's some heather as well down at the bottom. So we really want to try and get the heather to develop more, to expand in its coverage.
How long will, I mean, these are quite small, these couple of plants. How long will something like that take to populate the area?
Yeah, that'll take a while. And really what's important there is we need to make sure there's really good grazing to make sure that there's bare patches and really short grass during the winter so that they have the chance to establish.
And will that have been sort of indigenous to the area, or would that have been brought in through your seeding program?
No, that would have been here already. Yeah. You'll also see in the middle there, we've left a patch of scrub. So that's got bramble in there. It's got some nettles that have been growing up around the outside. So the nettles are a really good food plant for quite a few butterfly species. And the bramble's important for sort of breeding birds. And you can see along the margin of the field as well, we've left lots of scrub. So birds like stonechats and whitethroats will be able to nest. So you know, there's the sort of habitat here for wildflowers, for and other species to thrive in the field, but also there's shelter there for nesting and for maybe for adders as well, sort of to be able to hide away. So, you know, it's about creating that different structure for different animals to thrive.
So those are the sort of natural relationships or nature relationships. And then organizational relationships, obviously National Trust with Bazavaran Community Farm. Oh, there's some kind of, is that your bee? No.
I think that is the Burnet moth. It's definitely wanting to participate.
Almost right in my mouth. yeah, back into this moth is definitely interested in maybe the reflection in my sunglasses. The relationships between organizations. Obviously, you have one with the farm. Is there anything to be said about that? Larger organizations that may be helping or working with smaller organizations or smaller distributors, I guess, of the wildflowers or...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just great for the National Trust to be able to work alongside Basavan. We need wildflowers for planting in the meadows to help species decline and to help our habitats, and Basavan's like just an obvious partner to operate with, and by operating with, hopefully we can support Basavan in terms of buying those wildflower plugs to support their development as well. So it just seems to be a win-win for me.
By wildflower, you mean species that are indigenous to the area, correct?
Yes, that's right. So we're looking for native species.
Native,
that,
yes.
Yeah, that are, you know, common in our sort of countryside areas. That's what we're sort of trying to cultivate and expand. It's all part of the same sort of ecosystem. So, you know, when we're looking at our grasslands or our heathlands, you know, they are, families of particular species of plants and animals that sort of coexist.
Right.
So it's important to make sure those things are here. So here again, you know, if you had this completely covered in bracken or completely covered in bramble, then you wouldn't have these flowers here. The bees would, you know, have little interest here. So there'd be some bramble flowers and that sort of thing. But, you know, you think about what this smorgasbord of food provides here, and it could look very different if it was covered in bracken.
And if we turn around and look at some of the residences, because we can get a little bit of a helicopter view or an aerial view of what we're seeing, some terrace properties, some very manicured gardens, and then some wild bits and pieces that they've left behind.
I suppose that's really a good example of what we were talking about before, where you can maybe have part of your garden that's more ornamental and looks great and maybe brings you pleasure in terms of what it looks like, and then you've got the area next to it that's more wild, which is going to be much more suitable for wildlife. You can see the one area that's more ornamental, it's got very little cover for any sort of wildlife, and it's got limited pollinator options, so there isn't a lot going there for wildlife, whereas the other section that's been left wild, there are some flowers, there are some long grasses, there will be some wildlife that lives there. So, you know, there's more of an option.
I think that's one of the things that I've really learned about today is that, you know, a flower, there is a difference in the sort of flowers that you plant.
Yeah, definitely. In particular with the bees, you know, they need special types of flowers to be able to survive. If there were no pea family sort of plants here, they wouldn't not be able to find the pollen that they need to build their nests.
Mm.
So yes, they'd be able to find nectar, but you know, to fulfill their whole life cycle, they need the pollen from leguminous plants. So you know, that's a really good example of, you know, needing particular plants in a particular place.
And what's at stake if you just stay with sort of conventional Obviously bees and certain insects do come to, you know, to feed on those. But what will you lose if you don't invest in the wildflower project?
Yeah, so you'll have specialists that, you know, so in particular like heathlands, you'll have particular species that thrive in a heathland setting, maybe less so in a grassland setting. So it's important that we look after all of our different habitats, and within those try and sort of build the sort of structure and keep the species and the range of species that's supposed to be there.
In your opinion, and if you could sort of give an overall helicopter view opinion about where we are with, you know, biodiversity and are things improving? You mentioned earlier a number of 97% failure.
It's a sort of decline.
Decline, yeah, right.
97% loss of wildflower meadows. So we're still probably in the early stages. The UK currently, in the sort of terms of state of nature, reports that are issued regularly by the government, the UK is one of the worst countries for species decline. We've got a long way to go. We've got a lot of work to do. And to sort of reverse that, to get our meadows back to where they need to be, it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of time. It's not going to happen overnight. In West Cornwall, we've got 60 meadows which we've identified as meadows. Some of those are not bad. There's other ones that maybe have three species of wildflower in and really, you know, need a lot more work. But it takes time. Part of it's reseeding, but another part is leaving the grass to grow all season, then cutting it once at the end of the season. And by doing so, you then remove the energy from that grass, take it away. So you're reducing the amount of energy in the ground, and that's important because you want to stop those vigorous grasses growing and out-competing the wildflowers.
And is Cornwall sort of ahead of the game compared to other regions, or behind, or on par?
It's difficult to say. We haven't got that many meadows, I don't think, in Cornwall, which are really good. We've got some really good cliffland flowers, I guess, but lowland meadows definitely are depleted in Cornwall. You do see some, you know, some good examples, but potentially maybe in other counties there are better examples. I don't know. It's difficult to say.
Any last words of advice?
I would just say, just leave a patch for wildlife somewhere. Think about, you know, are there hedges you can plant so that provides berries in the winter? Are there, you know, the hedges for nesting birds? Are there other shrubs that you can plant for nesting birds? Can you feed the birds? Can you put a bird box up? Can you leave an area of long grass? Can you leave an area where hedgehogs could potentially sort of spend the winter? Could you put a pond in? Lots of different things that you could do in your own back garden, even if you've got a small back garden.
So it sounds like low maintenance, even no maintenance, actually has a lot of the potential to really affect natural wildlife.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Yeah.
Well, Ash, thank you very much for today's interview on the lovely and beautiful and sunny and a bit windy and breezy Cape Cornwall.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed episode 3, parts 1 and 2 of Go Wild, Planting Wildflowers to Encourage Biodiversity. If you wish to get your own wildflower project started, feel free to contact us at Bazavaran Community Farm, where we have supplies and the experience to make your project a success. We also have a list of events at bazavarancommunityfarm.org.uk. Until next month, when we publish episode 4, I'd like to wish you well on whatever your journey. Take care, and we'll see you soon. If you have any questions or concerns about this episode, please see our disclaimer at bazavarancommunityfarm.org.uk. The Twist and Sprout podcast is produced by themangolab.com.